You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! My guest today is Makoto Fujimura. Internationally renowned artist, Makoto serves as the director of Fuller Seminary's Brehm Center of Worship Theology and the Arts. He's also the founder of the International Arts Movement. His books include Refractions and Culture Care. His new book is called Silence and Beauty, Hidden Faith Born of Suffering. Makoto, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So there's probably a little groundwork that we need to lay before getting into a lot of questions, because your book is kind of about your journeying with God and with your Christianity, but also through another author's book.
That's right.
Shusaku Endo's novel, Silence.
Right.
For those who don't know, who haven't read Silence, I wonder if you can give just a brief overview, and I realize that's a gargantuan task, but a brief overview of the plot of that book.
Sure. So Shusaku Endo is a mid-20th century Japanese Catholic writer, and he wrote Silence. It came out in 1966. And what might be termed the most unlikeliest of bestsellers to have come out of Japanese literature, in that he wrote a book about persecution of Portuguese missionaries from their vantage point coming into Japan in 17th century, early 17th century, when Japan was closed to most of the outside influences, and they were specifically persecuting Christians. And this went on for about 250 years. And so Endo, a Catholic writer writing about this details of persecution and the fact that it didn't end up too well for the missionaries. And you might ask, why is this book found so much resonance in Japan? And we can go into that. But initially, the book did very well, and it continues to do so. The English translation has meant that the global audience have found a voice very much akin to Graham Greene's voice in the depiction of this cross-cultural journey. In Endo's case, it is about two Portuguese missionaries coming into Japan and finding horrific persecution of Christians. But the book, I think, is ultimately about universal reality of trauma and how one may find the universal voice through trauma that leads to a voice of compassion, ultimately. And I always tell people you have to read to the end to discover this voice. It's many people misunderstand the book by both the title of the book and the nature of the book, which is a very, you know, difficult reality to discover. It's based on history, but you know, it's a book that describes some of the details of the torture and what happened there psychologically as well.
Well, and you know, not only can a reader get lost in the darker things of the book, but the way it was formatted in English is a little deceiving as well, because from what I understand, the appendix in the English version was intended to be a part of the actual story in the original translation.
Correct. And right, the William Johnson translation separates what's now known as the appendix, but in Japanese version, there is no such a word separating. The very end of the book, which is sort of reads like a historical account. So most people don't even read that. You end up missing a lot if you don't.
So I think what makes Silence such an interesting book of its time was that, one, Endo himself was a Christian in a time where then, and I think, you know, now it's not much different, but the population of Christians in Japan was about 1%. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's the 1%, I would say. But most people don't realize in 1560s in Kyoto alone, there were about 300,000 Christians in the capital of Japan.
Well, and that's, you know, that's kind of the subject matter that Silence covers. And I had no idea about the rich history of Christianity in Japan.
Yeah.
And I think it is so interesting that that Endo chose to purposefully tell the stories of the failures of those who gave in to the torture that they were experiencing and recanted their Christianity.
Right. And this is the reason why it's so surprising that the book has become such a found great resonance to the Japanese audience and beyond that. But I write in a book, I hope I show a side of Endo that accounts for that as well. You know, he is one of the first young scholars, young writers to travel outside of Japan after the war. And he found his voice in France, studying French literature, but then contracting tuberculosis and ending up in a hospital in Paris. And at this point, he hasn't written anything yet. He was supposed to complete his PhD thesis. He could not because of the illness. He had to go back to Japan. And I note that his life has been marked by many failures. And he would even add to that many betrayals that he himself experienced and he felt that he had done to others as well. And he notes that post-war experience, particularly as a Catholic Japanese, that this was full of these dilemmas and difficult navigations of identity and faith, wrestling with faith issues, and so I think he found his voice in this difficulties of cross-cultural communication and journey, and therefore his language is one that is specifically attuned to that. And so I know also in the book that his language, his Japanese writing, is very easy to translate into English. English translation, despite some flaws, you know, communicates very well to a global audience and also to other languages as well.
Well, and it really seems like, I mean, truly no one could have written this book but him, because he was Japanese, but also it seems as though he had spent enough time away in Paris, yeah, and in other places that kind of gave him an ability to stand outside of Japanese culture and look in a way that others didn't. And the other thing that crosses my mind is that in any other time outside of post-World War II Japan, mm-hmm, he wouldn't have had the perspective that he had.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a very interesting point. You know, Silence is one of those books where I say in my book that Endo is like a mystery novel writer, you know, and he sets up these clues in the beginning, and those five clues or whatever, it turns out to be very misleading. It's intentional, you know, misdirection to force the reader to be a little bit confused and in some cases, experience this dislocation and trauma directly through the reading of the narrative. What Endo does so brilliantly is he, forces the Japanese to look at this journey from an outsider's perspective. So if a Japanese reader initially reading this, you know, he or she will have to read this account through a Portuguese, young Portuguese, priest. And for outsiders looking into Japan, this perspective also gives us this, objectivity, about Japanese culture. And it introduces us to a very, you know, complex map of trauma that that has become Japanese culture. And there's a great deal of mystery there.
So let's talk about your life a little bit. Your life and Endo's really mirror each other in some really unique ways.
Right. Yeah. So when I began to write the book, I was trying to bring into a story of silence to Western audience, you know, almost working as an interpreter of Endo's work. And then I soon realized when I began to write it that it was quickly becoming an autobiographical tale because of the overlaps between my journey of faith and encountering Endo very early on. I was newly baptized in a missionary church in Japan, and when I encountered these stepping blocks called fumies, which is a bronze cast image of Christ that the magistrates in 16th and 17th century used to hunt down Christians. Japan is such a highly visual culture that this technique worked very well. And these fumies that I encountered at Tokyo National Museum opened the door to Endo's work. And I had heard about the book Silence before, but and I think I read it in college, but I didn't have a context to fully appreciate it. And you know, I reread the book both in Japanese and in English, and that's where my journey began. And you're absolutely right that as I wrote this book, I noticed so much overlap between what he experienced and some of my experiences. And he is my father's generation, which is, you know, post-war and the, you know, generation that experienced the war, but had survived that and, you know, had to really reshape Japanese identity and culture and the rebuilding of the country.
Growing up, you spent time both in the States and Japan. You were born in Boston, you went to grade school in Japan. So I think that had to have given you the same kind of experience of objectivity to Japan and Japanese culture.
Right. And I was born to Japanese parents. So my first language is Japanese and cultural, you know, but I was brought up in a bicultural setting and which makes you a misfit in any place, but particularly in Japan. You know, you're keenly aware of that country that you know, seeks to be homogeneous and have a high level of groupthink is not a very easy place to navigate if you're even a little bit, you know, have an outsider's perspective. But then, you know, I think we realize that any type of trauma and any type of conflicts, you know, between cultures, you end up thinking about these issues as a misfit, as an outsider, you know. And then what Endo does, I think, quite brilliantly, is to turn that voice of alienation into a voice of compassion. And for that reason, I found my journey with Endo quite edifying. And I say in the book many times that, you know, I found myself confused or traumatized even by Endo's writings. And then at the end, I found myself strengthened by them somehow because of the deep identity that he held to be, you know, deepest identity that he held was this universal reality that can that trauma is a universal language, and every culture experiences them, and we can find each other and share that with each other. You know, and Endo's book has become that very way of communicating.
This month, I'm excited to announce that InterVarsity Press is going to be a new sponsor for Seminary Dropout. Each month, I'll be speaking with a different author about their new book. Chris Smith is an IVP author. He's also the editor of the Inglewood Review of Books and has actually been a guest on Seminary Dropout in episode 46, way back when, to talk about his book, Slow Church. This month, I wanted to talk to Chris about his new book, Reading for the Common Good, so I called him up. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Shane. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good.
So your world is kind of a lot of about books, because I mentioned you're the editor of the Inglewood Review of Books, which is an excellent resource. What made you decide to write a book about other books or reading books?
Yeah, it definitely came out of my experience of editing the review for almost a decade now, and really trying to ask the question, okay, so we are encouraging people to read more, but to what end? And that was really the central question that kind of led me into the work that would become Reading for the Common Good.
That's Reading for the Common Good, How Books Help Our Churches and Neighborhoods Flourish. Reading for the Common Good is available wherever books are sold, or just find the link in the show notes for Reading for the Common Good. So how did silence affect the way that you saw God in your own spirituality?
You know, that's a good question. I think looking back, it hovered, you know, in my journey for a long time. And frankly, to tell you the truth, I didn't know the depth of its influence and those influence in my life until I wrote the book. And it was definitely a book that I began writing and opened up to me this experience and journeying with Endo. And the more I read of his books, then more the lectures that he gave, I began to see something very unexpected, which was that Endo was actually guiding me, you know, through my journey. And so that meant that included my spiritual journey as well. And this book is a book that I want to honor both the Catholic tradition, which my wife is part of, and you know, we're grateful for her journey and how the enormous impact she's had in my spirituality. You know, even though I find myself to be a Protestant faith-wise, but you know, there's another realm through which Endo, the Catholic writer, expresses God's grace at a very deep level. And part of the test that we find ourselves going through is our tendency to judge people, and this is the trap, in a sense, that Endo sets in all of his books, is that our judgment, black and white assessment of often failures of our leaders, tend to reflect back on ourselves, on how, you know, our religion has become a way to to oust people or to exclude people. And Endo is a type of writer that creates these situations where it's impossible to perhaps keep your faith. And yet at the end, you find yourself in the arms of Christ. You find yourself in falling into the grace that operates beneath all of that in the universe. And so for that reason, I'm so grateful for his writings.
Can you talk a little bit about your conversion experience? I know it seems to me like art had played a huge role in that, that your art itself led you to kind of search for something.
Yeah, in my case, you know, making of art, the process of that has led to my searching spiritually, and that led me to Christ. I feel like through literature and through art, and certainly through the church, this missionary church that my wife introduced me to in Japan, and so many, you know, friends that I met over the years, has had a huge impact. And, you know, my wife has always had her journey with Christ. It seems that it began to really be amplified after we got married, and I felt there was something very genuine in her faith, and so that's had a huge impact. But I was a graduate student in Japan, and I recount this in the book. It's part of my the context for what I write about, of my coming to faith in Japan as a graduate student and learning to paint in 17th century Japanese method of Nihonga, and then realizing that, you know, this paradigm that I didn't have in late 20th century of having a paradigm for beauty, and that was clearly answered in my mind in the voice of Christ. And so in a sense, there's an overlap there too between Endo's rediscovery of the suffering servant who identified with people's pain, and how God does not leave you despite all of your failures. And, you know, there is this amazing thread running throughout history and through Endo that I found myself in the midst of as well. And so I was rereading Endo many times. I always find myself in the midst of that.
So back to silence.
Yes.
You know, that is, I think you touched on this, but it's I think what we would call historical fiction. I mean, the circumstances in the book are what really happened, but the, you know, the specific characters mm-hmm. come from Endo's imagination. Mm-hmm. So the way that the rulers in Japan went about trying to silence the Christians was that they would try to, one, prove that they would make people prove that they weren't Christians by walking on these fumiers. I think I'm saying that right. You mentioned those before. So they were like, fumiers were like, you know, help me, but they were like pictures of Jesus and the Virgin Mary, but they were like imprints, right? Were they made out of bronze usually?
They were cast in bronze, images of Christ or the Virgin Mary, right? And there's this debossed, you know, form on top of this plate. And so the villagers were asked to line up by the beach, and they had to step on these images. And the ones that I saw at Tokyo National Museum, was worn smooth with so many people walking over it over 250 years.
So, you know, usually what would happen was when a believer was asked to do this and they wouldn't, and then that's when the torture would begin, essentially.
That's right. And Japan is highly, you know, Japanese are so highly visually attuned that you could actually tell by their reaction whether they showed any response, you know, and people detained and tortured by any kind of reaction shown to the image.
And they were quite successful at getting people to recant.
Yeah, that's correct. And though found themselves, you know, many years later thinking about these people who survived the 250 years or generations that survived them. And he realized that his faith in some way was very deeply connected with them, because, you know, they're the forefathers of our faith, in a sense, in Japan.
You know, one thing that I was thinking when I was reading all this was, I think this is a very, very modern way to think about it, but, you know, I thought to be asked to, like, stand on a picture, a sculpture, an embossment of Jesus doesn't really have much to do with my real belief in him or relationship with him.
Right.
But to them, that was really the mark of denying God publicly.
Yeah, and this has to do with this highly visual culture. But I think, you know, it also has to do with the identification of the divine with the sense of beauty. And it was just highly visual in, you know, in Japan. And so it does seem strange to, you know, many of my American friends, you know, they say, like, I you know, I have no problem stepping on, you know, images of Christ. But to a Japanese, this is a very significant reality. And I also note in the book that in some ways, you know, this may be one of the connections that Endo intentionally or unintentionally wanted to help us with was to see that, you know, that our faith is there is a such thing as a visual faith, you know, and the Japanese culture amplifies that, and you know, this is something to consider given the historical realities of the church.
One of the lines you had in the book was you said that silence sees God as experiencing pain through God's children, through weakness rather than strength.
Right.
Boy, I think that a Christianity through a Japanese mindset has so much to offer the world and American Christianity in general, who tends to see God as only triumphant and only power and only might.
Yeah, so Endo is very intentional in this, that he is introducing us to a version of the gospel that has remained hidden in Japan So, you know, I say in the book that Japan is not a pagan nation. It is a hidden Christ nation. And through many of its art forms and, you know, stories, that we might be able to rediscover Christ in a new and fresh way through Japanese culture and Japanese aesthetic. And I think Endo's book is one of the paths that opens that up for us. So I think you're absolutely right that there is much to be gained in thinking about this.
Well, the last thing I want to ask you about, yes. Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
He's making a film of Silence.
Yes.
That's wonderful. It's cool that any, you know, director would make a movie of it,
right.
But someone so capable,
yes.
That's particularly exciting. Did I understand right? Did you get to meet Scorsese?
Yes, that's correct. And part of my beginning this journey was meeting with Mr. Scorsese and talking about his history with Silence. And I, you know, because I didn't want to be involved in a project that you know, in a way that would be a kind of a culture wars conversation.
Oh, sure.
It was very clear to me after the meeting that this was his life work. This is very important to him. And you know, it's taken him 25 years to realize this film. And, you know, it'll most likely come out around Christmas time this year. But this is the 50th anniversary of the publishing of Silence. And for master movie maker to take this up, and to the extent that he has, you know, Mr. Scorsese has, the level of commitment and faithfulness to the original text and to the age of martyrs is remarkable. It was very evident from the first script. And I visited the set twice and, you know, saw the enormous commitment that they had to faithfully representing 17th century. And it was very impressive, and I'm very much looking forward to the film coming out.
That is so exciting. I was impressed. I mean, I'm sure that his films mean a lot to him, but you could tell this especially was like a life work for him.
Yeah, yeah. And the actors involved too, you know, they were so deeply committed, you know, from Andrew Garfield playing Father Rodriguez to Adam Driver playing Father Gape and Liam Neeson playing the older Father Ferreira. They all had such dedication